Excellent. Could you hand those out? That's great. We're going to look at teams and teamwork. But before we do that, I want to just start with do you remember what I did for my first degree?
Geography.
Okay. So, I like maps. And I want to use a mental map. You'll see here the diagram. I forgot to bring my whiteboard, so I'm doubling up with what we've got here. But you can see the idea of a triangle. Now, there's a very famous Christian teacher in the States who loves triangles, a man called John Frame. And it's useful just to have a mental map. Now, many Christian leaders just so busy spinning plates. They don't have to hold on a minute. Is there some kind of coherence to what we do? And I found this little mental map very helpful. A very famous mental map, some of you know, is Rick Warren's Purpose Driven Church or Purpose Driven Life, where he has a baseball diagram, baseball diamond. That's his mental map. And the church has these five purposes, and you teach people them and so on and so forth. But I found that too sequential and very American. So I've gone for a triangle because I can get my mind around three things. But three things that happen all at once. Church leaders need to encourage three things to happen at once. And the three things are: we want to encourage people to grow to maturity. So your first M up the top there is maturity. We want to grow Christians who are like Christ, to grow up into Christ. There's many Bible references, we don't have time to look at them now, where the idea of growing up into Christ. But I want to become mature. Paul talks to the Corinthians, something like, he said, I'm starting to treat you like little kids. By now, I wish I could give you strong meat, but you're still acting like infants, mere babies, as it were, mere infants. The aim, the goal, is to grow to maturity, to be fully formed disciples of our Master. But we also want to grow into, down here we want Christians to serve one another in ministry. Now, I know the word ministry has lots of different, kind of nuances and connotations, but the idea of serving one another, we just read that in 1 Peter 4, using gifts to serve one another. And that's something that every Christian is a servant following the servant king. So we want people involved in ministries, serving. And the third one, I've called it M for mission. We want Christians to be involved in reaching other people. So encourage maturity, empower ministry, and enable mission. And those three things, John Frame in his books always talking about, these aren't sequential. They're simultaneous. I want to grow up into Christ and serve others and reach out others. And I don't mean precisely at the same moment, but some Christians think, I need to grow to be a much more mature Christian disciple before I ever can tell other people about Jesus. I mean, a lot of Christians are like, I don't know enough. I couldn't tell anybody about Jesus yet. I couldn't invite a friend to a meeting. I remember once doing some training, just thinking about sharing your faith. And I said, just turn to the person next to you and in 2 minutes, jargon-free, share how you become a Christian. And a lady afterwards comes to me and says, I couldn't do it. She was over 80. She would have heard thousands of sermons in her life. She still felt she couldn't do it. Who was I asking her to talk to on her right in 2 minutes, jargon free? Her husband. She said, I just can't do it. I just feel too embarrassed. See, some Christians will wait to the very end of their life and still not feel mature enough. Whereas the challenge is to say, well, like the woman at the well, what does she do? The moment she is a Christian, she went and told other people to come and see the man. Come and see. Come and see the man who has. And also, we don't want an elite group of Christians say, well, I'm growing into maturity. This serving stuff is beneath me. No, servants we are. And serve we must. Serving others is not an optional tick box for the keen. It's part of what it is to be a Christian. Jesus showed us that, didn't he? We need to, as it were, get down on our knees, put a towel over our arm and serve other Christians as he served us. So these three things, each Christian, you want a sort of, if I can put it like this, bottom up. Each Christian says, I want to and I will do what it takes to grow, do what it takes to serve, and do what it takes to reach others. But it also needs a top-down organising. So it's not enough for Christians to say, I want to do those things, but how? Now, the larger a church gets, the more complicated it can be. So in a small church, you go to a church of 25 people, and you say, I want to serve. They hug you first, and they say, how many of the 51, you know, all these jobs I need, oh yeah, do what you like. Because in a small church, everybody does a little of everything, and it's obvious not what needs doing. But sometimes, as a church grows, what you find, it goes through different transitions, it goes through different sizes. There comes a point, certainly around a church smaller than you are, but bigger than your church plant is, where you get core and fringe. So core people are doing a lot, as they always have done, and fringe come and just enjoy. I love it. It's really lovely. Somebody plays wonderful music. Somebody makes lovely coffee. Somebody looks after my children. Oh, don't ask me to come to the premier because I'm busy, but I love what I come to. And the core people get really frustrated with the fringe people who just look like they're enjoying it. Actually, what you find as the church gets bigger, the fringe people don't know where they fit in. They think, well, you've got a fantastic band, you've got some good coffee makers, you've got a wonderful creation. Probably don't need me. And I'm a wonderful bass guitar player. But the rest of the group go, we don't want somebody who pushes themselves forward. So many fringe people too embarrassed to take part. And that's where you need some real leadership now. How do we help people get involved by growing to maturity, serving in ministry, and reaching out in mission? Leadership needs to facilitate those things. So at home, for maturity, we say, if you want to grow in our church, we want you involved in the large and in the small. All large churches grow by creating lots and lots and lots of small. Because if they grow large without creating the small, it's only a matter of time before the people leave the large. Because people need relational growth as well as knowledge growth and inspirational growth. So large, come to something large, a Sunday worship meeting. But get involved in something small, some kind of home group, some accountability group. Mission, well, Acts 16 gives us a wonderful three stories of people converted. Remember how Lydia, the slave girl, and the jailer. But they were reached different ways. So Lydia comes to a meeting. Somebody must have invited her. Come and listen, come along. And she listens and is converted through the word in a word context. But somebody, she was in a context where she was willing to come to a meeting. But you don't get slave girls. No, slave girls. You know, we talk that phrase, friendship evangelism. Nobody has demonically possessed slave girls as their friends. So she's never going to get reached by friendship evangelism. If a church puts all its eggs in friendship evangelism, it'll never get the equivalent of slave girls converted. Now, what are the equivalents of slave girls today? Well, there will be girls in the sex trade in Cambridge. There'll be girls addicted, men and girls, men and women, addicted to substance abuse, one form or another, alcohol, drugs. There will be people, victims of domestic abuse. There will be immigrants who are imprisoned behind a language barrier. We know someone very close to us who very happily married, actually, which is wonderful, and she's got four lovely children, but she's been in the country over 20 years. She still can't speak any English. Partly because her husband comes from a particular ethnic and religious background, quite happy for her to stay behind the door. She's in prison in a different kind of way than that girl was. So you need to go and find. You need some kind of compassion ministry, some kind of deeds meeting needs ministry. It has to be organised and thought about to reach slave girls. And jailers, blokes, how do you reach them? Well, you need to rub shoulders with. You need to be able to train people to go and tell their faith when an opportunity arises. Everybody around you is one day away from a crisis. You look at I don't know how old the Philippian jailer would have been, who knows. But he was a mature man because he had grown up children, children who could understand and believe the gospel when he baptized. probably a retired Roman legionary. And he was a man's man, a man of shame and honour. So when it looked as if his prisoners escaped, he was about to kill himself, not because he was a coward, afraid of punishment, but because he was a man of honour who didn't want the shame on him and his family. Rather die and bring that pain on his family than face the shame and the disgrace of failing in his work. You know many blokes like that? Many men like that. Being accepted by your peers at work is more important than anything else. Now, how did guys get... Like, they don't get invited to meetings because they never come. Don't need to come, that sort of nonsense. They don't get reached by these men, but they get met by other blokes who they meet who are different from other men they've ever met. That jailer would have seen many courageous men, but he'd never seen anybody singing hymns to praise God at midnight after a severe beating. What have you got that I've not got? So that's what a church needs to facilitate in mission. What about ministry? How do you organise Christians in ministry groups? How does a growing church do that? Well, we don't have to guess. I mentioned earlier Acts chapter 6, fantastic passage. There's so much that God teaches us through Acts chapter 6. But here's a growing church facing resource challenges, facing needs that it must meet with limited amount of time and ability amongst its leadership team. So the leadership team worked this one out. They managed the problem well. Acts chapter 6 would not have been solved by more preaching or more prayers. It's interesting, isn't it? One of the things the apostles are called to do, they say, we must pray lots and preach lots. But here is a problem in the life of a church that can't be solved. You know, you imagine that we're going to have a month of prayer to pray that the widows would be more contented. Or we're going to have a series of sermons about the danger of being a moany, groany, Hebraic or Greek-speaking widow. No, they don't preach or pray. They lead the church through it. And what do they do? Well, how do you get more people involved in serving? You establish teams. You establish teams. You don't just say, not my job, somebody out there will have to do it. Can I have a few volunteers? No, they call the whole church together and say, look, we need to empower some people to carry out this responsibility. It's a significant responsibility. And they put a small team together. Now, I don't want to say that Acts 6 at that level is prescriptive. This is the only way you're allowed to do it. But it is significant that where you see jobs done, they're often done by small teams. Paul is almost always working in a team. In fact, in his letters, he'll tell you when he's on his own. So I'm on my own, I don't like it. Please send, you know, Timothy, come back quick. Or somebody sent John Mark to me, it's really helpful. He works in small teams. And Acts 6, we get a small team being established. So in a small church, it's all hands on deck. Everybody does a little bit of everything. But by the time you get to a larger church, somewhere in the middle there, you have to re-engineer everything around teams. Teams of people. Now that is a major mindset shift. If you're in a small church, you make the coffee, you help put the chairs out, you serve in the creche, you visit people in hospital. You do a bit of everything. Everybody does a bit of everything. And that can work okay. But as it gets bigger and faster and more things done, core people feel worn down. And what you need to start saying is, look, we want you to do a few things well, not lots of things badly. So if you're playing in the musicians, you don't have to put the chairs out. If you're on coffee rota, you're not on the crush rota. If you visit people in hospital as part of a visitation team, don't worry about the youth work on a Friday night. See, what happens as a church gets bigger, it starts doing more. And you know, you could be at church staff every day of the week. So the key thing is to say, no, we only want you in a small number of teams. Maybe one, maybe two, but not much more than that, because we want you to have a life. We want you to be, you know, we want you to have, if you're married or with children, we don't want that to suffer because of all the business going on in the church. And you've got to learn to let other people serve. So they may be doing things that you used to do. You may used to work with the children, but now you go, do you know what? I can't do that and that. So other people are going to have to do it. Now, we know that some people can sit back and watch all that happen, but most Christians recognise they want to serve God. The danger is saying, let someone else do what you used to do so you can concentrate on your team and do it well. So establishing teams is the first way forward. Secondly, equipping people. Well, you equip people in all kinds of ways. You need to give them power. Not quite sure. Delegation. I'm not sure the word delegate has the right ringtone in our language now. Delegate tends to mean, look, this is a menial job. I don't like doing it. I've got more important things to do. You do it. That's what delegate. You tend to offload stuff that you don't like doing. So you delegate to your children clearing the table while you watch Match of the Day, whatever it is. You delegate. It tends to be dump jobs on people. Whereas I think the phrase for me is equip or empower people. Empowerment says this is a really important job. It has to be done, and we believe that you and your team can do it well. What a different ringtone that is, isn't it? It also, it helps leaders recognise, well, you know, definition of leader, a leader is responsible for the success of the followers. So Jesus, when he empowered his disciples, when I am gone, I will send the Holy Spirit who will make sure you succeed. See, he had the success of his followers on his heart. And so leaders need to empower. And in Acts 6, the team is recognised and empowered. We will hand this over to them so that they will do the job on our behalf. And very significantly, Luke picks up. So, because they established the ministry team, so the word of God spread. In fact, the church grew even faster, both quantity and quality. The church grew fast, and even priests are getting converted. Wow. So establishing teams is not a minor issue. And we need to empower people to make feel sure that they really feel supported and equipped and directed well, so that the leaders don't just go, well, hand it over to them and never ask them about it ever again. I don't care what happens in the creche. I couldn't care less about those noisy kids. You look after them. That is not leadership saying, how's it going? How can we help you? Do you need some more kids? Do you need some more volunteers? Can we pray for you? Can we pray for those children? We've heard some youngsters saying how wonderful creche is. That is brilliant. That's how hands-on a leadership team has got to be. They hand over the responsibility, but they don't dump and run. Somebody used to talk about that. Say, have you ever heard about seagull management? Some managers are like seagulls. They come, they squawk like mad, they dump all over you, and then they fly away. Don't you be like that. And we need to encourage, then, people to get involved in teams. We need to say to new people, we're so glad you've come to Eden. Can we encourage you in your Christian life by helping you serve somewhere in the family of God? We need members to be encouraged to see it as not as a, this is for the keenies. This is just normal Christianity. All Christians grow to maturity, all Christians serve other Christians, and all Christians are involved in mission. How can we help you serve? And if you've got a team structure with leaders that have been empowered, and people go, oh yeah, right. Now, how do you do that? Well, I waved something around today. I just bought one copy. It is. We produce an annual, we call it Grace in Action, an annual sort of team booklet of all the teams, of how they've got on and what they do and who's involved in them. And so we give to people, say, look, well, here's a team booklet. And you can look at all the different teams in the church and have a think about where you might be able to get involved and go and talk to some of the leaders. So here's a thing called Open the Book, which takes basically does assemblies in schools. We've got a couple of schools, and would you like to be involved in that? And they could read through and go, oh, I didn't know the church did all that. Because a lot of stuff that happens in the life of the church is non-upfront, isn't it? Tons of stuff. So how do they know? Well, you need to give them some help to get involved. Okay, so we've got them involved in a team. What's different between team and a whole load of people just doing it, as they do in a small church? Well, I think it seems to me that teams are more intentional. teams are more self-consciously, we are going to achieve this task for Christ and on behalf of the church. And it's a inclusive we as a team. It's a we thing. I know David Brent, you know, The Office, he said, I know there's no I in team, but I can find a me in there somewhere. It's very clever, isn't it? So we don't want it to be, you know, look at me, I'm the boss of this team. But teams help groups of people achieve things. And you know that little acronym, team, together, everyone achieves more. And that's right, they do. Together, everyone achieves more. You may be super gifted, but six people not super gifted can do more than you can on your own as a team. And so we want to get people in teams and functioning together, achieving a task. Now, I've come across this, it's very helpful, I think, called the Care Plan. It's from a guy called Walter Wright. He used to be a dean over in Vancouver Regent College. And just a little snippet, a couple of pages of one of his books on leadership, he talked about this, and it really struck a chord with me. And I found this extremely helpful. The Care Plan. Clarify the mission. Clarify the mission. If you don't keep up high in a team, why are we doing this? Then it will just become a task and not part of a vision. There's this apocryphal story, I'm sure it's apocryphal. John F. Kennedy was wandering around at NASA one day, and he bumped into a guy and says, what do you do? He said, he was talking to a janitor, I'm part of a team that puts a man on the moon. Isn't that brilliant? I clean the toilets, but actually my job is part of a team that puts a man on the moon. And that's what you want everybody in the church to write. I am part of a team that puts people in heaven. What do you do? I make the coffee. But I'm part of a team that puts a man on the moon. Our guys who do the sound, they say, we are trying to provide the best sound possible for people to hear the best news possible. So it's not just a technical thing. It's part of a bigger vision. And every team in the church is part of a bigger vision. So when teams meet, let's just remind ourselves what's at stake. What are we trying to achieve? Who are we trying to achieve it for? You need that. Because you know what happens after a while? People lose the why. And they begin to concentrate on the what. And after a while, the what is, what can we do that's the least that we can do to get away with it? Whereas if you keep your eye on the why, and the why is not so much what we can do for Jesus, it's always what Jesus has done for us. In the light of who he is and how kind he is, well, we want to serve him with the very best we can do. Now, every team needs a bit of that. It's always vision before action. And that, clarify. What do we want to do? Who are we doing it for? Then secondly, A, agree on goals. How are we going to do it? How are we going to do this? And that's great when a team can discuss that together and together get some... That's a great idea. So how do you deliver coffee to 400 people?
Whoa!
Yeah, wait one. Sorry, it's just in there. It's just there. Okay, here. That'd be great on the tape, won't it? They wonder what's happened at that point. Agree on the goals. Now, how do you deliver coffee for 400 people quickly? Let the team work it out. The leaders don't need to start being control freaky, you know, minutiae people. So often leaders get dragged into controlling the smallest things. Whereas the team, and there's a wonderful sense when a team says, we've thought about this, and this is what we're going to do to achieve our goals. And you get then a lot of congregational ownership of the whole life of a church. If the eldership, leadership, always dictating everything, people go, do you know what I am really? I'm just a slave, really. I am just a number. I'm a functionary. But if the team agrees on the goals, and the elders and the leaders say, great, the elders or deacons, I don't know whether you've got those as well, they just say, we are here to help you achieve those goals. We encourage our teams to use some SMART goals, because we always want to know, how much will this cost? When will it be done by? But it's great when you get, if I can put it like this, ordinary Christians together discussing how they're going to achieve those goals. You must have a load of visitors, don't you, at Cambridge? I mean, you just get loads. How do you monitor them? How do you track them? Well, we have a team called the Connect Team. There's about 10 people in it, and they're
only purpose in life.
It's to spot new people, give them a warm welcome, try and get some details and follow them up. That's their team job, because it's so important to give people a welcome. Now, in a small church, you can spot the visitor a mile off. They've got like a Belisha beacon on their head. And you're the visitor, and everybody says, "Hello, lovely to see you. Are you going to come back to our church? In fact, we're never going to let you go now you've come." But in a big church, you say, "I have not got a clue who's new. I don't know." Well, how do you stop people falling through the... Well, you need a team on the job. They're going to help you recognise new people and give them a welcome. But let the team work that one out, how it's going to be done. R, review your progress. Clarify your mission, agree on your goals. R, review your progress. Christians are very bad at this. They don't like feedback, because it's seen as a personal affront, a personal attack. People, "Oh no, an appraisal," or "Oh no, a review meeting." But review is not about telling you off. Review is, how can we do it better? And it's done well as a team. We had, when we first started this, we weren't used to it, as most Christians aren't used to getting reviewed on what they do. So I said, "Right, okay guys, I want to review what we do. But what we do, we're going to video the whole meeting. And we're going to start seeing how can we do it better. And what we're going to do is review my bit." So we would all get together, we'd show the tape of the whole meeting, and then we said, "Right, we want to help you, Ray," that's the goal, "is to get better as a speaker. So let's look at the tape," and I said, "Okay, can I just have 30 seconds first to say, look, I had a late night last night, you know, I'm really tired, so sorry, it wasn't as good as it should have been. Then after that, right, now you shut up, Ray," and we did a MOTD2, you ever watch Match of the Day 2 on Sunday? They had two good, two bad. If you gave somebody all the feedback you could give them, I mean, they would just die, wouldn't they? Because we all know we've got lots of room. But two good, two things that work well, and two areas to improve on. And we did that for about six times, till the guys learned that I was absolutely mortified. No, I found it helpful, and they saw me improve. They go, "Oh, actually, this review thing is not personal attack on Ray, but it was giving him some helpful review feedback as a team so that we could get better." So then we started on the guys who led and did the Bible readings, and the girls who did the Bible. We started, and do you know what? It's been so helpful getting a bit of review. How could we do it better? Now, every team needs to do that. They need to have a debrief, not with like, "You idiot! You absolute idiot!" No, that's not part of it. Well, I don't know. You've experienced that? Some of you, it looks like you have. But it's more like, you know, actually, if we'd only put that there, we could have done our job better. Next time, let's do that, shall we? Oh, yeah, that'd be a good idea. Review is about creating a culture of excellence. People don't want to serve in teams that are humdrum and dutiful and dull. Remember how Paul told the slaves, "Work at it with all your heart, for it is the Lord Christ you are serving." Well, if slaves can do that with rotten masters, can't Christians with one another? Do your very best, for it's the Lord Christ. And review helps us to keep on getting better. And as you see, as a church goes, "Do you know what? The music's been brilliant these last... What's happened?" Well, the team's got together and talked about it. Final thing, equip. Equip those taking part. Who's going to be involved, and how can we equip them? It may be a bit of kit, maybe a book they could read, or an article, or a talk about that area. It may be they just need to sort of get together and talk about this and debrief and have some fun over a curry. But you need to equip people. It's no good just giving them task, 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 task. You do need some kind of support and encouragement and recognition. Remember how Paul, it's bizarre this, you ever pick this up? Paul writes to every church, bar the Galatians, to say, "I thank God for you." But you think about that. The thank goes upwards, doesn't it? He thanks God. Well, he could just do that. But he always lets them know. He thanks God, but he lets them know. Why? Because he says, "I appreciate it. I want you to know how much I appreciate your prayers for me, or your faith, or your love, or partnership in the gospel." Because appreciation goes miles. In fact, they did some tests on this, and they said to people, if you could be paid more or get more recognition, which one would you want? Everybody said more recognition. A little bit of thank you. A little bit of I really appreciate what you did. Well, I have a chap at home. He's the only guy in our church who employs anybody. He employs about 350 people. He said, Ray, I hate your job. I could never do your job because you have 350 volunteers. And I have 350 people I can hire and fire. He said, you'd be amazed how a last written warning or, you know, a pay rise, how that motivates me. You haven't got that, have you? I said, no, I haven't got any of that at all. All I can do is inspire people. I can't fire them easily. But I can't reward them much. But all I can do is say, I thank God for you. And people need that. So there's a little care plan. So our teams work with this care plan. Final thing. How can you get involved? So if you're in a team, I would encourage you to think strongly about having a bit more structure. Because some teams just flap. You know, they get together and it's a bit of a planning meeting and it's all a bit ugh. A care plan keeps us focused on making sure our teams are lean but not mean. But shape. Anybody come across shape before? Rick Warren in his Purpose Driven Church has this little acronym, very helpful. How do I know which team to fit into? Where do I serve? And he says, well, it's a complex issue that. It will be a mixture between you and what's needed. And in some churches, what's needed is more help with the elderly. In another church, it might be what's needed with the children. You say, I hate children. I hate them. I can never do children's work. You say, hold on a minute. Somebody needs to make the orange squash and get the biscuits ready halfway through the evening. Oh, I could do that. Do I have to talk to the little rock? No, you don't. Just make the orange squash. Oh, you could be on the team, even though you hate children, because somebody needs to make the orange squash. That church needs orange squash made. I could do that. All right, I'm willing to serve, even though I can't cope with children too well. So it's not a that's it for life. Shape is not that's you and that's it. Its shape is also where's the round and the square hole in this church that needs my shape. Now, shape stands, he says, for these five things. First of all, your spiritual gifts. When you became a Christian, did you find some kind of new ability, capability, that you think, you know what, since I became a Christian, I have found that when I talk to people one-to-one, God uses that to bless them. I have a new gift. I never used to be able to do that, but I've now got a spiritual gift, I suppose you'd call it. God has given me this new gift, your spiritual gift. H, your heart. Your passion. What do you get excited about? I get excited about buttons. I'm so excited. Buttons and gizmos. Oh, I'm the man. Great, because you'll be on your team soon. Yeah, see, buttons and some other people go, you know, anything with food. Other people go, anything that cries and burps and I'm in. See, you know, we're all shaped. What's our passion? What do you think? Oh, no, it's the kids' holiday. Oh, great, the kids are off school. Well, I don't know what it is for you. But we all have different passions. Things that we get excited about. I'm sports mad. And I was looking forward to going cricket this afternoon. So that's my shape. That's my heart, my passion. A, ability. What have you always been quite good at? The kind of person you are. I've got a son, don't know where he gets it from. But ever since he's a tiny little boy, he has drawn everything. He always used to, when I talk sermons, we encourage the kids to listen in, and he would draw spider diagrams of my talks. And then after 5 minutes, he would start doodling. But surprise, surprise, when he was 18, he did an art foundation. Then he went on to do an art degree. And now what does he do now? He's a designer, creative designer. He's always been like that. That's his ability. He was even converted by some of you know the bridge diagram, the thing the navigators use, you know, God and Jesus and God and us and the bridge. He was converted when he saw that diagram. He had heard the gospel many thousands of times from me and my wife, but it was only when he's 15, because he's what? A visual learner. He always has been. So his ability, it's no good asking Christopher to do the touchy-feely things in church, like, because he's a drawer. I've got another son-in-law, Graham. He works on radio. He's on the Chris Evans programme. It's Golden Graham. Graham has got tremendous musical sensitivity, and he's a good technical guy. And he's got good upfront presence. So when we do a big community thing, we put Graham up the front. That's his ability. He's always been like that. What are your abilities? What are your natural abilities? Things that you think, you know, I've always been good at that. It's no big deal to me. I just find it easy. Some of you learning languages, talking to strangers. My wife Jenny, when we go to other churches, she goes up to people and says, I'm new here today. Hello, who are you? Whereas me, I sit still, just do nothing, have a cup of coffee, go. But she's got that ability to just meet people, loves it. P, personality. What is your personality? Are you extrovert, introvert? Are you an introvert that masks it by being a bit extrovert when you have to be? Who are you? But you have a personality. Some of you are optimists. I am firmly in the half-empty school of reality living. Some of us are quiet, some of us are sporty, some of us are musical. What is your personality? We tend to think that other people are more Christian because they've got a personality not like mine. Oh, they're so good at meeting people. They're so good at being friendly. They're so good at deep stuff. Oh, none of that. No, God has made you who he wanted to be. Your personality is a gift of God to you. And it's part of how you serve him with your personality. Then finally, your experiences. Probably, Warren says, your experiences are the thing that God uses most to touch other people's lives. So I told you earlier about the loss of a grandson. Almost always in a group of the size of ours, somebody will come up after and say, I lost one too. Was that an experience that was easy? No. Does that experience sometimes help other people through life? Yes, it does. And that would be true of you. I got fired out of the blue. I failed to get into the university of my choice. I developed a significant problem. I got bowel cancer when I was in my 50s. Whatever it is, these experiences of life that at the time hurt you like mad, but God sometimes then used them to touch other people that nobody else would touch. In one sense, God has sanctified that experience to be a blessing to others. So you look at all that, spiritual gifts, what your passion is, what your abilities are, what your personality is, the experiences you are, that helps you understand who you are. And then you look at what the church needs and you try them out. There's not a great big sign that says, Ray Evans, just over here. Sometimes you need to try things out. You know, I tried out that. It wasn't my shape. I tried out that. Actually, that's what I found a great. And actually, the church needed that a lot. So it's not a case of easy, obvious, but it is a case of, as you explore your shape and the church's teams, you will find somewhere where you go, do you know what? I feel as if I'm right in the groove. I'm not going against the grain of my personality or against the grain of my abilities or my passions. I'm working with who I am and I'm finding myself serving with others. And we're accomplishing things in the life of our church that enable the gospel to flourish. That's what teams are all about. And when that happens, there is a synergy, we call it, don't we? That's going on, that is, it's just beautiful to see it. It's just, you know, there is a buzz about teamworks. And at the back end of it, you go, do you know what? We accomplished that. It's amazing. We accomplished that. Well, even today, I guess the people who organised this day will go, do you know what? 180 people came and had a fabulous day. It exceeded our expectations. This small team, I don't know how many of them have been beavering away to make this day happen. Aren't we blessed by that? Well, every team can do that. And every Christian can have the privilege of being on a team that gets people ready for heaven. Teamwork. Okay, we'll stop there. And we'll just chat amongst ourselves for a while. I mean, in that sense, any immediate kind of feedback. Questions, comments, things you've found in your own experience.
How do you stop a team becoming a clique?
Yeah, great. I think that's a very good question. There's a kind of stages of teams. Some teams what we call storming. They're really making progress. Other teams plateauing and other teams becoming toxic. And if a team starts becoming a kind of inward-looking, we're exclusive, and that's where the key quality is the quality of the leader. The leader, teams need leaders. The leaders, just keep an eye on this. So, a team leader, you may have one or two, but teams need leadership. They need to... You imagine a big circle. A leader needs to lead south, people who work in the team. A leader needs to work east-west. He needs to coordinate with other teams. And the leader especially needs to lead north. He needs to constantly inform and encourage the leadership of the church to know what's going on. And that's what stops that happening. If a team starts to become a little bit all we, us, and exclusive, a leader says, hold on a minute, that's not healthy, is it? We need to bring new people in. We need to get people to see the big vision again, that it's not about what we are, it's about what we do for Christ. So I think it's a leadership issue. And a good leader will recognise when it's getting a little bit exclusive like that. And the whole review thing will help. Oh, one of the questions you say, are we getting a bit too, you know, exclusive here? Are we open to new people with new ideas? So I, as a leader, need to spend a lot of time training other leaders, so that in teams that doesn't happen. You think back of Exodus 19. When was that? Just before Exodus 19. The giving of the law. Just before the giving of the law, what happened? Moses had a visit from his father-in-law. And what did he see? Chaos. He saw chaos reigning. Moses was working faster and faster and faster, and nothing was being done very well. And in that context where God is prescribing so much, and it's serious, even the colour of the pomegranates on the high priest's robe are going to be blue, God says. In that context where God has given so many laws, this non-covenantal member comes in and God says, listen to him, Moses, he's got a lot to tell you. What does he say? You need to set up leaders of tens, leaders of fifties, and leaders of... Moses, you've got to reorganise around small groups of people and appoint leaders, men of good character, etc. And it's a phenomenal insight, because what it's saying is there are times when the people of God need to use a lot of wisdom about how they accomplish the tasks God set before them. And it will normally revolve around getting small groups of people together with a good leader to accomplish something. In Moses' case, leaders of tens, leaders of fifties, and so on. And that leaders of tens is about what... about the size you want your teams. Richard Holmes, one of my... it's very sadly died a couple of years ago now. He was professor of military science at Shrivenham. And he wrote loads and loads of books about military history. And one of the things he picks up on, he said, there is something about the number 10 that has been consistent down through military history, human history. It's about the size of group where you have face-to-face contact with colleagues, comrades, to achieve goals. So he said, the pikemen who fought in the Greek army, they manoeuvred in groups of 16, a file of 16, but actually fought with 8 men around them, the same 8 colleagues. The Roman army was in 10-man, 8-man tent units. The Prussian army was around what was called the Kameradschaft, the group of guys. The British army, you fight in small squads. He said, it's always been there throughout human history. It's about that sort of size, 10 or 12, we would say. Because we remember, a small group of people accomplishing goals. He said, well before the psychologists and psychiatrists and the sociologists got to work on it, throughout human history. And Moses picks that up, group of 10. You look after a group of 10 with a good leader. So it's leadership in small numbers, and that's how you build a big organisation. You don't build a big organisation by going for the big numbers, you go grow an organisation by growing small. With good leadership. So the leadership stops that cliquiness happening. And if you start, if group members start feeling it is, the leader needs to say, look, we've got to change this because this is not good. We just need to be open. Does that help a little bit? Okay. Any of them? How many of you serve in some kind of conscious team? Not all of you. Some, quite a few of you do. So how does it feel working in your team? On a scale, one, not very good at all. 10, phenomenal. Heaven on earth. Where are you? Honest enough to say.
7.
Okay, nearly at heaven. Good. Okay, that's good, but positive experience. Do you use intentional, or do you just get together to talk about the job?
It's more like a group of people that are on the same rotor, so we mostly function individually,
okay.
But then periodically get together to compare notes and talk about the plan, so we don't work together frequently.
Yes, okay, yeah, I understand that. I would encourage, if you are on a kind of rotor thing, to stand back from the rotor. If you don't stand back from the rotor, what happens is the job is like this. It's the task. And you're, hold on, what's the mission? And how is it really getting better? Is that fair? Yeah.
I was just going to say, have you got any ideas about that? I mean, I certainly run a sort of rotor, and we very much with children's work, we very much work individually from week to week. But then I have a planning meeting every term. I just wonder if you've got any comments or suggestions about that.
Yeah, I think obviously life's busy, you can't have too many more meetings.
Yeah.
That's where it's really important that people aren't in too many teams. If they're in lots and lots of teams, they don't have the time to do the task, but they don't step back to review what it's all about. And I think termly's about right. Much less than termly, and the team won't feel like a team.
Yeah.
More than termly, and people's diaries are too crowded. But termly, but when you do meet, we found the care plan has really helped our termly meetings to have some structure. Because if without that, you so quickly get lost in the detail and you don't think of the bigger picture. So for example, without some kind of structure, nobody asks the question, how can we equip you or ourselves to do this task better? Why don't we all go on a seminar day? Or why don't we read this book together? Or why don't we... That doesn't happen. You're just so in your face. You know, I've got little Johnny and he's 3 and he's driving me nuts. Can he come into your class? Oh, no, I don't want him. You know, that's what happens, doesn't it? You know? Well, maybe it doesn't in your church, but... But it becomes problem-based. It's all about the immediate. And not about the kind of, hold on a minute, what are we trying to achieve here? So termly meetings with some structure, I think, is very helpful. Yeah.
Eden is very rotor-based.
Yes.
And the rotors are done independently.
Yeah.
And sort of given to the members.
Yes.
We've got a steward rotor and a copy rotor.
Yeah.
And a deacon's rotor and a this rotor and a that rotor.
Yeah.
Very seldom do those groups actually meet together.
No, that's a good point. We like you. It's interesting. Is it John Hindley? John over in just a little church in Norfolk my sister goes to. He says, oh, to be in a rotor-less church. But you see, that will commit the church to always being small. A rotor-less church, by definition, will be a small church because it's tacit. As it gets bigger, it has to have some kind of organisation. That is the danger of getting organised, is we have rotors for everything. But we say to our leaders, you mustn't just impose this on people. You do have to step back, whatever it is. Even the guys on the welcome, the guys and girls on the welcome team, you must step back and talk about it. How does it feel like being welcomed at our church? Let's walk ourselves through it. And when we did that once, we found we were giving people too many handshakes. Too many handshakes. Is that possible? Yes, it is. Most blokes do not want 6 strangers to give them a handshake. They go, cult, must be a cult. They also don't want to see the guys on the door giving everybody a big hug. Or their wives, or the women going in getting a kiss. And go, you're not kissing my wife. Who do you think you are? So you've got to think it through. But you don't think it through if you're just on a rotor and never meet. So part of a leadership skill is to get the leaders apart. I think many church leaders don't do this very well. We train our speakers, but we don't train our team leaders. But you need to get those team leaders apart to talk about how to lead a team well. And part of leading a team well is to come back and talk about the care plan. So if I said to your team leaders, you said, we haven't got team leaders. Conversation I need to have with Julian. But you see, you need leaders who know what the care plan is, who then say, look, we're on a rotor, but let's get together once a term to look at what we do. Could we do it better? And if someone says, I don't want to do it, I don't care. Oh, no, if it ain't broke, leave it alone. You're off the tee, because our team wants to do the very best it can. Because we're serving Jesus. We want to give everybody that comes a warm welcome as if Jesus was welcoming us. How can we do that better? But we know exactly how you do, because we're the same of these rotas. But the people who compile the rotas are team leaders, not the overall leadership of the church.
But they don't, sorry. I don't think of them as team leaders.
No.
They're just rota organisers.
Rota organisers. Okay. Well, you may have somebody, some of our leaders delegate or empower. You do the rota for us as a team, but they don't do it independently of the team. That's the difference between a rota organiser who just puts volunteers' names down. You must re-engineer to true teams who talk about this together, because that's the only way you gain ownership. Because what happens after a while, I don't know how long you've been in Eden, but if you've been in a church after a while, you get really, oh yeah, my name's on the rota. Okay, year in, year out, my name's on the rota. 20 years in, oh, my name's still on the rota. And okay, it's my turn. You've lost enthusiasm for the task. Whereas if you're in a true team, okay, the teams will always be changing. You want it. New people come, people go. We give people permission to come and go out of teams. That's really important. You're not stuck with a job for life. You say, look, if this is your shape at the moment at your stage in life, then great. But if your circumstances change and, you know, you think other opportunities, yeah, move to another team. That's brilliant. So there's a constant in and out of teams. True teams get ownership of what they do. And that's how you gain ownership by the whole church of this ministry stuff. Otherwise, it's duty driven. And it becomes like, I'm on a rota, I'm stuck on a rota, I can never get off this rota. Will I still be on the rota after I've been dead and buried? Will they remember? So teams who own it get excited. Names on a rota. Okay. If you're a dutiful Christian, you'll kind of grin and bear it. At best after 20 years. Because we're not in the family of God for the next 6 months, are we? You know, this is a vision for a lifetime. Good point, great point. Any other experiences of being in teams? Any nightmares you've had? Any of you been in teams that have been completely utter? What are the things that can go wrong? Obviously, you've all been in good teams.
Well, that's the whole point, we're not in teams.
No, okay.
On rotas.
On rotas. Okay, it's a good point to learn, isn't it? Acts 6, those guys didn't turn up and go, oh, my name's on the rota. I'm now looking after widows. Did they? There was a much more ownership by everybody. And we need to think about that consciously.
One idea was that team members need to realise that some people within the team might find the job harder.
Yes.
And I mean, I was on a university mission team once, and one of the people said, "It's you know, what's the problem? It's easy. You just talk to people about the gospel." And I thought, Actually, it's hard for some of us.
Yeah, that's a very important point. I think one of the things that's lovely is that team members, unlike volunteers, all need to be capable independently to accomplish the task. If you say, this is a task, we as a team, how are we as a team going to do it? You can have somebody very quiet who says, well, who might have a wonderful insight, who might be able to do things behind the scenes. Like the lady who does, we had a lady, an old elderly lady, very hard of hearing, who used to do the orange squash and the snacks for the children in a children. She couldn't run. She couldn't cuddle, she couldn't teach, but she could make the orange squash. And she did feel, and that's where a team can embrace a variety of capabilities, which is different from a rota. On a rota, everybody's going to be able to do it. In a team, you say, well, I'm not very good. We have a little boy called Isaac, he's my nephew's son. He's only 7. He can't operate the technical stuff, but he loves taking it apart at the end of the service. So you can trust in that. He'll unclip all the cables. Now, we have to put all our stuff out because we haven't got our own building. You wouldn't believe how long it takes to take it all down. But little Isaac, little seven-year-old, he can serve on that little team. He just pulls the cables out. And he does it. I don't mean pull them out and rip them open. But he loves it. And he's a role to play. He's the pull the cable out man of the team. And that's the lovely thing about this. If you look at what we've got to achieve and you break it down into little steps, what are the little steps that need to be done? So we do donuts on our 9:15. We have two morning services, 9:15, 11:15. Then the 9:15s get donuts. It's kind of bribery, really. It works very well, actually. It's wonderful. But somebody has to put the donuts out. Somebody says, look, I'm useless at talking with people, but I could put the donuts. And I can make sure the donuts are out there where they need to be for the end of the service. Now, you think that's trivial, but somebody's got to do it. And when everybody gets a donut with their coffee and smiles, oh, it's lovely. And you come, oh, you do donuts. The person who does the donuts is part of the mission of welcoming people who are listening to the gospel, and the gospel can change their eternity. Does the donuts matter? Can you do it without donuts? Well, sport illustration. Clive Woodward, he led the 2003 Rugby World Cup coach. He talked about critical non-essentials. He talked about all the little things that you do outside of playing rugby that mean that England won the World Cup. So all the players had a laptop to be able to get, you know, email home. They had all kinds of little things. Strictly speaking, don't affect the game of rugby, but you add them all up together, and yes, they do. Critical non-essentials. What are your critical non-essentials? Also, Dave Brailsford, who coached the cycling team, he talked about incremental marginal gains. He said, biking, you think it's just about going around a track. He said, if we could improve by 1%, lots and lots of little areas, we can beat anybody. So what are the things that make all the cyclists take their own pillow? Wherever they go, they take their own pillow to sleep at night. Do you do that? I do that now. What a difference it makes. I get a sleep. Because you go to these travel lodges and they're all fluffy things, aren't they? They're fluff. They're useless. So I take my heavy pillow, I can bury my head into it. But he said, you just all these little things. Now, what are 1% little gains your church could do? Well, he said, 1% more prayer on a Saturday night, 1% more smiles on a Sunday morning, and 1% more food with people. And you will find, and you could do that for teams. What are the little things? Who could do those little things better? That really does make some progress. So they're not unimportant. Okay? So people sometimes feel inadequate in teams, but that's again a leadership thing.
Yeah. I was thinking about being probably held quite infrequently on a rota. I suppose I'm interested in being part of a rota, just thinking, I suppose I feel like I don't want to expect them to come to a meeting as well.
Yeah.
As if like they're already kind of being really kind, giving up their time on Sunday morning to help out with the rota. So I'm sort of caught between thinking it'd be great to get people onto a meeting maybe once a year to get them to think about why we're doing this and ways that we can improve, but also. I don't want to help.
Yeah. That's the whole thing. That's a very important point now, because life's busy. People's timetables are complex these days. But I think you want to say, the message you want to give to people, this job is so important, it's too important to do it casually. If you can't make our team meeting, well, you have to serve on another team then. We want our team. It's about how do you create a culture of excellence given the parameters of our lives. And you don't want too much, you don't want to drive people insane. But that's where we say we don't want you on many teams. So if you're on one team, great, but let's do it well. And if it's worth doing well, we collectively meet. And you, as a team, you might say once a year, but I would say termly. If someone says, I can't make termly. You say, well, probably you need to be serving on another team somewhere because the job's too important. The mission that our team is about to accomplish is too important to be done casually. And it's also part of, this is another spin-off. In a small church of, say, 30 people, you recognise everyone, know everybody by name. In a medium-sized church of, say, 90, you still recognise everybody easily. You probably know everybody nearly by name. You people probably only 30 people by name. A church of your size, well, as Dave said earlier, hello, I don't think I've met you before. Well, that's quite normal in a large church, but the way you compensate for, here's a bunch of people I don't know, is that you serve with a team where you know 10 to 15 people, and you're in a small group of 10 or 15 people. I still know 30 people by name quite well, but I also join in with the other 600, and wow, it's exciting. But you have to have that relational glue in the large, provided through the small. And if somebody says, I don't really want to belong to a small at all, you say you will drop out of the large, because you must provide relational glue. And the team ministry and the small groups provide some relational glue. So you need to say to somebody, by not coming to a planning meeting, you're going to lose out hugely. This church will feel just a bunch of faces to you after a while. And if you've got children, you say, oh, I'm so busy with the children. You say, your children, if you lose interest, they will definitely lose interest. So actually, enlightened self-interest would say, get yourself along to a meeting, clear the deck. But we make sure our team leaders really promise people, no, we're not asking too much. We will not get into meeting-itis. But I do think you need to set the bar high, because the benefits, not only the tasks get done well, but people feel part of it. If they go, a bit like with children, if you say, when we leave the table, we all take our dirty dishes and put them in the kitchen. But if you do that to a five-year-old, you'll know he'll be a good wife or a good husband. Whereas if you say, oh no, mummy will do it all, and the children get used to being lazy. So what are you doing? You are condemning your child's spouse to a miserable life. So you might as well bite the bullet. And then they start seeing it as normal. So, and then when they get married, you're proud of them, because they're like, I've never met such a kind husband. He helps clear up after. You go, yeah, we got it right when he was three, you see. It's a bit like we set the bar high and people come up to it. So we don't want to get mad on that, but that's where we want to go. I think we're done for time.
Has anyone got a timetable? I lost mine.
When should we finish? 12:30 break. Oh my goodness, you're losing out already. Okay. Thanks very much for being patient. If you want to chat to me during the day, please feel free to do so. I'd be more than happy to do that. Let me just close in prayer. Father in heaven, we thank you that the Holy Trinity, Almighty God, Father, Son and Spirit, in community, planned, performed and applied our salvation. And we are now part of that phenomenal Trinitarian gracious work of God. Help us, we pray, to serve you well, serve our brothers and sisters well, to serve our community well. Please give us grace to serve as Jesus served us. We ask it in his name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Thank you.